listening to Daycare Overhaul, doing childcare better, presented by Childcare BizHelp.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Daycare Overhaul, where we do childcare better. I am Caroline Jens.
And I'm Justina Patterson.
And we are so excited to be here today.
Which we say every time because it's true.
I know. We need to change our intro. I feel like it's the same every time.
That's okay.
It is okay. Well, today we're going to have a really awesome topic. It's on having a voice and being an advocate for the childcare industry, which is a topic that is very much needed right now. And we do have a really awesome guest with us today that is an expert on this very subject. And so we'll introduce her in a minute. But before we do that, Justina, how's your week going?
You know, I have a story for you.
Uh-oh.
Okay, first I have a question. Do you enjoy candy corn?
I love candy corn.
Okay. I feel like it's one of those things like people either love it or hate it, kind of like Peeps, you know, and I don't mind it. So I'm by my parents visiting, and my younger sister, for whatever reason, decides she needs to buy the turkey dinner flavored candy corn.
Turkey dinner flavored candy corn.
Right. So there's six different flavors. Ugh. Now, I feel like most people would be like, oh my gosh, there's probably a pumpkin pie flavored one. That's really good because we're in the season of pumpkin spice everything.
Right.
Well, you would be wrong if you thought that.
So what flavors are in there?
I actually had to look them up because I didn't remember. I tried to block that tasting out of my mind. These are the flavors. Roasted turkey, green beans, stuffing, ginger glazed carrots, cranberry sauce, and sweet potato pie.
Okay. So it's kind of like that Harry Potter. What are those little jelly beans?
Oh, yeah. The every flavored beans.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Only you know what you're getting and you think, oh, my gosh, there might be with some that are okay. So it was me, my husband, my sister, my mom, my dad decided not to partake. And that was a smart decision in this whole ordeal. We lay out the flavors. And so, and they're colored, like the green bean ones is very green. The cranberry sauce is very pink. So the first one we had was green beans. It tasted like I licked a shoe, if I'm being very honest.
It's kind of like my keto peanut butter cookies.
Yeah, which sidebar, if you listened a few episodes back, Caroline talked about those, and my sister also made them, and I tried them. They are, they're it's chalk, basically.
It's chalk.
Anyways, well, getting back to the candy corn. What?
At least it's not tasting like a shoe.
I would rather have the peanut butter cookies.
Ugh.
So we tried green beans. I actually ate it. Like, I swallowed it. I can't remember what we tried next. But the only other one that I fully ate, I think, was cranberry sauce. Because all the rest of them, I had like two bites in and it was so bad, I had to spit it out.
Yeah, I don't think I'll be doing that.
You know, I don't know what Brox was thinking. Like, hey, this sounds like a really good idea. I feel like they missed the mark a little bit.
I agree. I don't think that is something that is going to take off.
No, don't even buy it. If you see them, do not buy them.
Do not buy that for me for my birthday.
No, but you, yeah, that's right. Your birthday's coming up.
It's my birthday month.
It's your birthday month.
Oh, happy birthday.
Thank you. I get a whole month for my birthday.
You know what we did do with the candy corn, though? We gave what? Them to my brother-in-law so he can mix them with like normal flavored candy corn and play a trick on his brother to see him like take a big handful and put them in his mouth. But I told him, I'm like, you have to make sure that we're all there so we can see his reaction because it's terrible. Like, I don't know. I feel like pumpkin pie would have been far sufficient because everything is pumpkin flavored right now.
Right.
That is candy corn.
Well, your family always has crazy adventures.
So that's my crazy story. But you just mentioned something coming up, your birthday. Well, by the time this podcast goes live, your birthday will have passed.
But again, it's my birthday month.
So what have you done to celebrate so far?
a whole lot of nothing, but we have this really cool experience planned. And it's a picnic experience.
Oh, yeah. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So you get a clue the night before and they tell you where to go pick up your basket. And so you start by picking up your basket. They give you another clue and another clue and another clue. And they take you to all these different restaurants to fill the basket. And then the final destination is at a secret place where you have a picnic with all the items that are in your basket.
So are you guys the only couple doing this? Because I'm assuming you're doing it with you and your husband.
Yes, it's just my husband and I. And so it's like a 3 or 4 hour excursion or whatever. But we have no idea like where we're going or what we're going to be eating. I'm really excited. So I'll have to, in a future podcast, talk about how it went.
And take lots of pictures. That would be really cool. I would be curious to see if when you show up to the secret location, if there are other people showing up to the secret location that I know you guys are doing it by yourself, but if there's like a whole day event going on where other people came in and did it too, you know?
Or they could all just come and sing happy birthday to me, maybe?
Maybe that's the plan.
All right. That sounds really fun.
Well, there's our guest, Miss Cindy, and this is a perfect segue into introducing her. And Cindy and I met, we met like a year ago, right?
We did. We met in February at the Hinge conference, Miami.
We did.
I met you there.
That's right.
Yes. So, one of my old work acquaintances was there from when we worked together at Learning Care Group.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Mandy with daycare team, shout out. Hi, Mandy. But Cindy, do me a favor and pronounce your last name. I forgot.
It's Lenhoff, my husband's good German last name.
Perfect. Well, if you could all see Miss Cindy this morning, she's got the most beautiful necklace on, really beautiful red top. She looks gorgeous. She's got her heels on. Unfortunately, we're not on video this morning, but thank you, Cindy, for coming on the show today. We're so glad to have you. Cindy is the director of the National Child Care Association. And a little bit about her background, because like I said, she has been in this industry for a very long time. She's got exposure all over, and you've just been on kind of a media kick lately. You've been on pretty
media frenzy. Media frenzy. Getting more used to using the technology that allows you to be in Florida, Justina to be in Wisconsin, and me to be in Washington, D.C. today.
How awesome is that, right?
Yes, it is.
And we don't have to wear face masks. So
because we're in a room by ourselves.
Right. Well, let's talk a little bit about your background. You worked in early care and education since 1980. You've served in several capacities, including preschool teacher, director, district manager, and vice president for one of the nation's largest child care providers. The career accomplishment that you are most proud of is supporting directors in over 100 centers in achieving national accreditation by the National Early Childhood Accreditation Program. This included supporting teachers and directors that had worked in the industry for many years to achieve educational and certification requirements to satisfy accreditation and state QRS requirements. She served on the following boards: Oklahoma Child Care Association, the Governor's Child Care Advisory Committee, the National Child Care Association Board, the National Early Childhood Program Accreditation, which is NECPA, and she's been serving as the director of the NCCA since August of 2019. Whew, that's quite a bio. And like I said, we met about a year ago, and you know, when we met, I could see your passion for this industry, and we were supposed to have you on season one of our podcast, but then COVID hit. I'm glad that you were able to reschedule with us and join us today. Welcome.
Well, thank you. First of all, I want to thank you and Justina for inviting me. It's always a pleasure to spend time with others who share my passion as you do. Because I felt the same way upon meeting you both. I would also like to extend thanks to Justina for trying out the different kinds of candy corn. way I know not to purchase any of that for my grandchildren. I personally don't care for candy corn, but my husband does. I know he's not going to go for the flavored. He's very traditional, but this will save me time and money. So thank you for that.
Hey, I do what I can.
You know what? I always say we help each other.
Right.
And you know, that's, you know, one of the focuses that we have at NCCA is that we can help each other when we work together. And first of all, let me just tell you a little bit about NCCA. NCCA had its start in 1987. I was not there for the start, but I was, and it was, it started out as a federation of state child care associations. And their goal was to become a legislative voice and be at the table as providers of the decision making, both on the operational and on the financial side at the federal level, because that's where everything starts. A lot of providers spend more time at the state level with their advocacy, and there's nothing wrong with that because it does need to occur. But there's also, I mean, everything rolls downhill. And it starts with the federal budget. And that's where NCCA comes in. I was able to be a part of that board for 5 years back in the early 2000s because the company that I work for had a seat on that board. And because they extend states, the NCCA extended membership beyond states to companies. But I was also a representative of Oklahoma Child Care Association, because I will tell you, the Oklahoma Child Care Association taught me so much about how to do business in my community, because at that point in time, I was strictly Oklahoma. Now, as time went on, my duties expanded over time to 12 different states, depending on, you know, the needs for my areas, you know, of expertise in the role that I played. So there was a time, though, that child care association states started to kind of fall apart. And that also caused some issues for National Child Care Association. And as I understand it, because this is when my company stepped out, they started to bring in individuals as part of the association. So now we're made up of state associations, individual providers that own maybe one or two or three child care centers, and individual educators, which I believe is a really good mix and representation, you know, of the industry. Our mission is to support licensed providers in quality care and education, including the provision of professional development, advocacy, and community engagement. We also have a plethora of benefits that we offer, and we've been very careful since I came on board in August of 2019, which, by the way, is when NECPA took over.
Okay.
The National Child Care Association. And so, and we only had one benefit at that time. And with Storm's help, our executive director, we now have 10. And we've been very selective, because we really only want those business affiliates that can really enhance and help our members, our providers, with the success of their business in quality care and education. Back to our mission. We actually have turned down some folks that we felt like was not a good fit for our mission. And so I'm very happy to say that the professional development side, I think the program that we recently worked with, or that you've brought to us as a benefit, is the leadership piece. We also have a relationship now with Quorum e-learning /Kaplan, because they're partners, that offers a very affordable CDA coursework, to our members. So I would just say go to our website, ncpanet.org, and you can view those. Or you can always give me a call because I will talk to any provider that has questions, needs help at any time.
Wonderful. And I think, you know, one of the reasons we wanted you here today, I don't think childcare centers take enough advantage of their local associations and accreditation groups and, you know, advocates like you. I think we have a tendency to, you know, not join these types of organizations, and they're so valuable. I know we joined a number of organizations when we ran our center, and we have to, if we're going to survive through things like we're going through now, we need support, and having partners like you is so critical. And I know, Justina, you'll probably interject, but we'll put all these, any resources that we talk about today will be in our podcast write-up. Right, Justina?
Yeah, we'll put them on our website. So if you go to childcarebizhelp.com/podcast and find today's episode in the resources area, they'll all be listed there.
And we are also happy to reference your podcast to our members so they can go view not only this one, but the others that you've done, if that's okay with you.
Oh, that's awesome.
Because we certainly want, again, it goes back to our mission is to support licensed providers in their success in delivering quality care and education to children.
Perfect. Well, so Cindy, you are exposed to so many different childcare professionals. What have you been seeing happening in our industry? Maybe you can paint like a pre-COVID and a during COVID picture of what you've been seeing.
Yes. Pre-COVID, before COVID, we were, you know, seeing a very fragile childcare infrastructure in the United States, made up of 129,000 licensed providers. And of those, 93% are small businesses. And I emphasize that because then we're going to move into, you know, talking about who's in jeopardy, you know, during COVID and why. There were 115,000 family daycare homes, which play an important role, and they are either licensed or registered. And the combination of those two took care of about 12 million children and employed about 2 million childcare professionals, including providers and educators. Now, keeping in mind that there are millions of other type of childcare. I think it's over 3 million childcare people that are actually participating in the delivery of childcare. But those were just the licensed, which I think is another, you know, thing that we need to think about how we can expand upon that and help others come into that, you know, that fold. The childcare infrastructure before COVID was fragmented because, and I'll give you an example that I look at as fragmented, having been in 12 different states. So if I'm in the state of Kansas, the child teacher ratio for base licensing is one teacher to every three children. But if I'm in the state of Arkansas, it's one teacher to every six children, infants.
Right.
So think about when we talk about quality, that makes the industry fragmented because while there are a lot of commonalities in licensing, everybody has a child staff ratio, they're very different, which impacts the kind of quality you can deliver.
Sure does.
There's also, it's very, it was inequitable, inaccessible, and underfunded. And let's just talk a minute about inaccessible. Right now, about 50% of all children live in a childcare desert.
Right.
And this is pre-COVID. meaning that there were more children between the age of 0 and 5 needing care than there were childcare spots. This is typically lower income areas and typically rural areas. So we were already dealing with that. Then when we talk about underfunded, these are some numbers and I'll just throw out a few, but when I first looked at this, I was a provider for a long time and did not realize this, even though I was really involved in advocacy. But being a part of First Focus, the Children's Budget Coalition, I attend regular meetings, now, of course, Zoom, not in person, and they provide us with constant emails and updates. And they put together the children's budget and where money was spent from year to year. Now, I really want to emphasize nonpartisanship in this. It's not a political thing because this kind of thing has been going on for years. It
right.
doesn't really matter who's been in office. But the 2020 federal budget pre-COVID, for the entire federal budget, it was $4.75 trillion. Now, consider that children are, for the most part, discretionary. Militaries, not discretionary. Children are discretionary. So this comes up every year to say, how much are we going to, put in that pot?
Right.
Well, for all children's requirements, whether it be early ed, K through 12, homelessness, nutrition, medical needs for children that need help. The budget for 2020 was less than 7.5% of the entire budget, or $373 billion.
Oh, wow. That's a big difference. Yeah.
Now, keep in mind that over a 10-year period, this budget has never, ever reached double digits. It's always been somewhere between 7 and about, the high 8s. So then if you come down into the early childhood realm, there is only set aside for early childhood in the federal budget is $16.7 billion of the $4.75 trillion.
Wow.
Yes.
So we are definitely underfunded.
We are. And Head Start, who I think is a wonderful program and serves, very needed children or children that need them. But I would use this as an example of an inequity. Head Start is budgeted, again, very low, $10.6 billion. And that is going to allow them to care for about 867,000 children. Child Care Development Block Grant, which is what providers use, is funded at 5.8. So almost half of what Head Start gets for 1.3 million children.
Huh.
So you have to start to wonder, why is one child worth more than another?
Right.
And we really, that is something that there's an opportunity. Yes, Head Start needs more. Child Care Block Grant definitely needs more. And when people start talking about quality and salaries, for early childhood professionals, this is part of the problem because Head Start is able to compensate their educators more than we are.
Right. So recruiting, that was obviously, pre-COVID was an issue.
Yes. Recruiting and retaining credentialed and degreed teachers. And the other one is affordability.
Right.
For our lower middle and middle class, because providers are having, in pre-COVID, had to charge more, to pay more, and, everything goes up. The issue is that a lot of our middle income customers are falling into the category of non-licensed care because they have to go for lower rates. And there's such a great opportunity for some tax credits for those folks that would really, really help us. And right. It makes me excited to think, it, you know, there's that part of me, I get a little aggravated, but then it makes me excited about, there's nowhere to go but up.
Right.
If we can get enough people into that voice, we could do this. Now, all of these issues, of course, just filter down into during COVID.
Right.
I mean,
right.
None of them went away. The benefit, which I hate to think of it as that, but COVID has really exposed the crack.
Right.
The big crack in the infrastructure. So it's shed a huge light on the fragility of the childcare infrastructure.
But it put that light on the fact that we are a critical piece of the infrastructure.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, I think I mentioned this last time, but I read that we are finally being recognized as being as important as the other infrastructure in our communities, like roads and utilities. Childcare is that critical.
Mm-hmm. Essential. We are now recognized as essential. We've always been. And I did a video that we put on social media just reminding our folks out there that you are essential and never believe otherwise. You were and you still are. And, you know, it's just we need more essential people, though. And there is a movement where a lot of older individuals that have been providers and educators are leaving the industry into retirement. I tried that. I retired in 2016, but I'm happy to say that I was ready to, actually, it's just a pleasure to be able to do this and use my brain in another way. I just wish I could make more progress, but somebody said it's taken on an elephant, you know,
right.
One bite at a time, and lots of people are helping to bring it together. 35% of our child care centers right now remain closed, and 21% of our licensed homes remain closed. This is recent data from Child Care Aware of America, who has an amazing website.
Yes.
And they absolutely have a lot of information. They tried very hard. Normally they put out like a 2019 report comparing to 2018, but this year, and they just released this, they put out what data they could gather for 2020, because they felt like they had to, you know, have some current information, because it just, the report wouldn't mean as much. Of these, most have lost about 25% of their capacity in order to create the potential of social distancing, and some as much as 50%, depending on the state mandate.
Right.
Overall enrollment, therefore revenue, is down as much as 50% in many centers, which of course we're seeing increased cost in PPE supplies to keep teachers and children safe. Cleaning processes. You know, people are hiring companies to come in and fog. They're having their carpets cleaned more often. And staffing right now, because of smaller classrooms, due to the fact that some people are not feeling comfortable bringing the children in due to the mandate to reduce how many children you can have. So if you could have one teacher in a pre-K room with 10 children and you were mandated to cut that in half, or you chose to cut it in half to create the social distancing opportunities, you're talking, the teacher still makes the same, but you now have half of the money. And I know you understand that. I mean, I'm speaking to the choir, but that's what we're seeing.
Yeah, that's, I was just talking to someone the other day, you know, how each classroom, you need to be at full capacity, because those last like 2 to 3 children in that classroom is where you actually start making some money. And right now we're lucky to see some of our centers breaking even right now.
Exactly.
You're lucky if you're breaking even. And I think just, you know, talking about ways that we can get that voice out there so that we can get some additional funding, again, to lift our industry up as professionals that we are, and essential is going to be so critical.
I was just thinking back to how you mentioned the childcare deserts. I know in Wisconsin specifically, I think the statistic is like 10 years ago, there was like 10,000 licensed childcares in the whole state. Now there's like under 4,000. That's before COVID hit.
Exactly.
And now if, you know, a quarter of those or a third of those aren't open yet or will not reopen, and there's care that's needed, like, what do you do? You know, like, what do these families do that desperately need the care because they are essential or they are going back to work and there's no space for their kids?
Well, and unfortunately, what's happening is women are being affected more than men because there's still somewhat of a family structure where the man is the main breadwinner, and so if one income has to be sacrificed, it's you know the woman of the home. And then of course we've got single parents, both men and women, and that's a real struggle because they have to have care. They are the only support, you know, in their family. And this is going to get worse. It's absolutely going to get worse if we don't see some more help from our government. The CARES Act was a really great first help, because it did give the opportunity for small businesses to apply for the PPP grants, which helped them along for about 8 weeks in paying staff and keeping people on payroll. It also, a lot of states have taken some of their CARES money and have put it into the form of grants or extra payments for essential workers to receive funding, but that ran out. The CARES Act money is pretty much gone. Mm-hmm. Some states turned it into grant money so that because we started to see a lot of our children that are that receive child care subsidy, their parents were losing jobs or were afraid to bring their kids. And again, those centers wanted to remain solvent. So when those individuals came back, they had a place because we were already seeing not enough childcare. So they made payments. Oklahoma, for example, they had CARES money left over. And if you were a 3-star center that cared for children on subsidy, you received a $10,000 payment for, I think it was 2 months, March and April. So they would get like an additional $20,000. And then if you were 2-star, it was $5,000. You know, it's based on their QRIS, but those are just some good examples. But now all of that is gone.
Right.
And people are limping along. Which, you know, how can we make things better?
Right.
You know,
we make it sell doom and gloom, but.
But we can. We can do this. I know we can.
Right.
And maybe, you know, it's taken a little bit of a wake up call to say we're going to really have to gather a bunch of voices. First of all, I would say that providers, as busy as they are, and I know because I left a school and I got to go back a school that I'm consulting with. And right now, my consulting job is more hiring manager to staff a school that wants to grow because now we can grow again. But we lost some staff through COVID. So anyway, I know it's hard to take time out. But first of all, providers need to be informed of what's happening before it happens at the federal level. Because if we wait till, and this is kind of what I've noticed about the industry in all the years I've worked in it, and I was a part of that, and so there were times. It's like we complain after it's done.
Right.
And it's too late. It's not going to be undone.
Right.
So, and who's the experts? All of us that have worked in this field, all of us.
Right.
And we We complain, but we just go about our business. So join NCCA, you know, join a state organization, join a local organization, at least be in the know about what is coming. And but if I will say, if you join NCCA, we're going to keep you informed of what's coming or what's not coming.
Right.
And the other thing is, if you are a member of a group, whether it be NCCA or NACI, or we have what we call action alerts. And we put those in our newsletters. We put them in our social media. We don't create them, because what we have the opportunity to do is we partner with groups like Child Care Aware, the National Women's Law Center. They have an early childhood committee that we participate in. NACI, again, they have action alerts. They put them out. We have permission to pass them on to our membership. At the click of a button, you can let your senator and your representative know that you that we need $50 billion right now.
Exactly.
And so, and here's the one I think that could really turn up the flame on our legislators, because legislators don't necessarily want to hear from me. Now, my legislators want to hear from me.
Right.
Senator Scott and Representative Walz want to hear from me because I'm their voter. I'm their constituent.
Right.
Okay. And it's, we can talk to those individuals, but they want to know what their voters think.
Exactly.
And from what I've been able to learn through my journey over the last few years, especially as last year, is it doesn't even hit their agenda unless they hear from six people. Six voters, like in a very short period of time.
Interesting.
And then it's passed on to them that there might be something going on. So can you imagine what would happen if we could get six people, you know, every day?
Right. Right.
You know, with the action alerts. And we have, as an industry, our big opportunity is we need to get our parents involved. When parents start complaining about, you know, a rate increase. And I get it. I have, you know, children who have children that are paying, you know, childcare fees. I get it. Is that maybe we should say, hey, when was the last time you talked to your senator?
Right.
Or your representative about a tax credit? Let me give you his information. What about businesses? Okay, we don't have the money in this industry to pay a big lobby. So you either have to change it with money. Unfortunately, I'm not a fan of that one. Or you have to change it with voice.
Right.
We have big businesses out there that have a lot of money, that employ a lot of people who need childcare. So how do we, and this is a question I've even asking myself. So if you guys know the answer or know somebody who knows the answer, but how do we get the Walmarts of the world?
Exactly.
You know, and the Amazons of the world speaking, working with us to find out what it is we need from our legislators to do our best work for their employees that have children that need care.
What's interesting is that just, I think, over the last 3 months, we've been getting a lot of inquiries or RFPs, requests for proposals, from communities.
From where? I'm sorry.
From communities that want to have an evaluation done to see how they can bring childcare into their community. I think community leaders are starting to step up and say, you know, we're in a childcare desert. We need to do something about this in order for our community to continue to thrive. So they're contacting people like us to help them bring childcare to their community.
Well, that's encouraging.
It's super encouraging. And it's been like that, like I said, for like the last couple months. We've just gotten like several different communities throughout the U.S. that are seeing that need. So just, you know, again, it's a way for us to have a voice. You know, communities need childcare. And I think what you're saying is so important. You know, one, staying on top of the different associations and hearing what is coming on the pipeline is so critical. And getting involved with our parents and our businesses you're right. How can we get these big guys out there to help advocate on our behalf?
And I think for a lot of us, it's parent, or for a lot of providers, it's going to the parents and saying, have you talked to your human resources department? What can we do? I'll talk to anybody to say, hey, here's what we need. I know one of the things that that I think I'd like to recommend to providers out there, and it goes along with this topic, but it's more about emotional support. This is something none of us that are alive and doing business today
right deal with.
And so some days it's like put one foot in front of the other and just hope that, you know, we get to the end of the day and everybody is safe and sound and that we have enough cash flow to open another week. But I would really say to every provider out there, don't suffer in silence.
Right.
You know, be a part of an organization or reach out to others in your community that are doing the same thing you are. I think sometimes if you are a private provider, you just don't think, if you're not a part of an organization, which I think that's the easiest way to go. And I said it earlier, the Oklahoma Child Care Association, they were the ones that said to me, come join our board. We need, I was running, several child care centers in Oklahoma, and they were running many more than I were. And together we could, we had the same pain.
Right.
We could solve our problems. We learned not to be afraid of each other because there's enough children out there for us all. And they were the ones who actually got me on fire about accreditation and credentialing my staff, which came, of course, before accreditation, mm-hmm. and ultimately showed me how I could raise quality. And because I was in a state that recognized where 50% of all children were funded, it raised my reimbursement on my subsidy children. I could pay teachers more. I could have more supplies. So if you're out there suffering in silence, reach out. And I will tell you, whether you're a member or not, I will talk to you.
Right.
Because I want to make sure that everybody that needs, just an ear or a shoulder, I can either help you through it myself. I can maybe hook you up with a member close to you. But don't suffer in silence.
No. And I love that point. There's so much emotional, wreckage going on. It's a roller coaster every day. And I think one of the cool things in our industry has been, we've seen so many childcare centers unite forces and help each other. Whether they're just talking through, like if you had a COVID situation in your center, and I just had my first one. We see people collaborating and helping how to get through that, giving advice, sharing procedures. It's sharing resources. Like you had mentioned that fogger, and there's lots of different foggers you can buy to help disinfect your classrooms and stuff. But we just see people sharing and helping. And I love what you said. We don't suffer in silence. Don't be alone. There's so many people that are willing to just help you out. And I think if there's one message I want to get out there today with this podcast is there are so many resources. We have to take advantage of them. We don't have to do this alone.
And again, that's exactly what I think will help us even more come together to create that voice to carry, over to our legislators. If we unite and work together for the thing we're most passionate about, which of course is caring for children and families, then we can begin the journey of saying, okay, together,
right,
we can change this. I think for a while we've waited for other people to change it. And I think it's because the industry is very burdened, mm-hmm. with staff shortages and things that, don't allow you know, for the time. But if we can just figure out as a unified group, you know, that we could take a few minutes a week and never let our legislators rest. Email, call, takes a couple of minutes. Don't let them forget. Don't give them permission to forget that we are essential.
That's
one of my standard lines too.
Don't give them permission.
Silence. And don't give them permission, because our silence gives them permission to keep us at the bottom of the budget. You know, there are 25% of our population is children, but 7.5% of our budget last year went to meeting their needs. And we're only serving 1 in 6. There's only enough money to serve 1 in 6 children.
Wow.
That are actually at the poverty level or below. And again, we're not serving our middle income. I always think about when you go to college and you're middle income or lower middle income, you can qualify for Pell Grants and things that help a family of lower earners.
Right.
But there's nothing set aside for that. And, you know, we have kids that are never going to get to college because they didn't have quality care and education at the beginning of
right.
their learning years.
So critical. Such good stuff. And I know we're going to post, like I said, a bunch of resources that you had mentioned. We'll post your information out there in terms of like how people can get in touch with you. What's next for NCCA and NECPA? What's next for you guys?
Well, of course, we're working with the other organizations to keep people notified of the fact that we still need $50 billion. Unfortunately, our Senate is very stalled on that. And we really need to emphasize that, you know, pick up the phone, you know, get on your computer, you know, respond to one of these action alerts, or just write an email that says, help. I am a provider in Tennessee, and I am, you know, 2 weeks from closing my doors. And this, I have 40 parents that won't be able to go to work. Things like that. We are also, again, trying to get our presence out there. We are doing some webinars. We did our first one last week, and we want to we're introducing our members on our webinars, the different business affiliates that can help our members and those potential members. And our last one we featured was NEGBA, National Early Childhood Program Accreditation, and the support and help you can get there, along with a discount if you're a member, and our two credentials, child care professional, which carries almost the same weight in many states as CDA. And then, of course, we also have a director credential. And we also have a business affiliate that does marketing at a discount, mostly digital, because that's where a lot of providers need some help. And and then we will continue to have speakers. We have I-360 coming up that supports child care providers in many different ways. We have you, Caroline, because you support. Yay! And I can't wait to see that leadership box.
I'm excited.
Because I will tell you, in all my years of multi-unit managing, you know, once I got past the director level, it was all about teaching really great early childhood educators how to make that transition to leadership.
Right.
And become the educator for the educators and the business leader. And we also have Hoppin' In. I'm excited about that.
You met Shalom.
Yes. And I met Shalom at the same at the same conference. And I just thought I loved his presentation.
Yep.
I met his parents. I mean,
he's going to be on our show in a couple weeks, right, Justina?
Yes.
Oh, great. Well, and we were really excited about Hoppin' In joining us because we feel like, you know, that's an opportunity for revenue growth.
It's such a great, it's, I always regret the fact that I didn't know about hopping in when we ran our center, because I wish we would have. You can earn such great additional revenue with your in your center. We should put the link, Justina.
I already made a note on my paper to include that as well.
Yeah, because see, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to put out benefits through business affiliate members that really can help the center again. Support the center in success, as our mission states, in quality care and education, and ultimately give people a little bit of a discount where that's applicable.
Right.
So we're excited about the webinars. I love to go and speak at conferences. That's really my forte. I love to go do visits on the Hill. And unfortunately, both of those things are not available to us right now, but right. I know they will come back, because I have hope and faith in our ability to find a way to manage COVID in our future, where we won't always have to be videoed.
Perfect. I agree. I cannot wait. I'm speaking at the FLACY conference, and it's just not the same not being there in front of everyone.
I know. I was at FLACY last year.
Yeah.
I didn't speak. I had a booth, and I was, you know, trying to get everybody to call Senator Rubio and get the $5 billion we were asking for last year, which seems like a drop in the bucket now. Mm-hmm. And in spite of a lot of effort on Child Care Aware's part, NEGBA and NCCA's part and NAISI's part, we didn't have enough voice for that $5 billion. And so therefore, we got $550 million, which may sound like a lot, but it's not really in the scheme of things. It didn't allow us to really help get more money into the hands of providers, because right now we really struggle to see states pay what it actually cost.
Right.
And so, but we're going to do better. You know why? Because as Maya Angelou once said, when you know better, you do better. So right now we're trying to help people know more, and COVID is really, you know, pushing us to, you know, make sure that people know more. So that's the upside. It's a small upside. So we will do better in our future.
I agree. I believe it. Thank you so much, Cindy, for being with us today and for teaching us on how to have a voice. And how to partner and find advocates and really be an advocate for ourselves too. We appreciate you so much coming on today.
Well, and again, I appreciate what you do. As I told you in February, having worked in a corporate setting where we had a lot of, you know, support in our home office, I knew that my smaller provider friends who own child care centers from the Oklahoma Child Care Association, that they had to do a lot of that. And I do know in working with the governor's advisory board in Oklahoma that a lot of centers failed because they didn't know how to balance, you know, the heart and the head,
right?
The quality in the checkbook.
Right.
And as I understand it, that's part of what you do. You work with the small providers to help. And I'm so happy that there are services like yours out there.
Thank you so much, Cindy.
Well, thank you. It was my pleasure. And since we both live in Florida, we're going to hook up one of these days.
We'll be flying Justina in.
Yeah. Let's do it. Can we bring Mandy too?
Yes.
We'll bring everyone. We'll just get a big plane and fill it full.
All right, let's do it.
Well, what were you going to say, Cindy? I was going to wrap things up. So
okay, wrap it up. I just wanted to reinforce that I won't be helping Brock's be successful in their new candy corn campaign. I won't be going out to buy all those things you talked about earlier.
Ditto.
Oh, good. Good. Thank you. Well, as always, thank you for listening to Daycare Overhaul. Be sure to follow us on social at Daycare Overhaul and get involved. We're going to list all the organizations mentioned today on our website write-up. So go to childcarebizhelp.com/podcast and find today's episode. If you have any questions for us, please send us an email, info@daycareoverhaul, and we'll see you guys next time. Bye.
Bye. Bye, Cindy. Bye.
Bye.